upsets Councilmember Fitzmaurice. I think he should perhaps retire to the Hill and the university if he's really upset about these issues. And he was called today, by the way, as was Councilmember or Mayor Crone, to know that there was criticisms of their political conduct happening on the air today. And he, Fitzmaurice, has never called into this show. I think he's unwilling to stand on his record or to debate it. But if he chooses to do so today, I'd be happy to give him a forum to speak, because I'd like to hear what he has to say about these issues. So, Tim, 427-3772 is the number to call if you'd like to call in. The same for you, Chris Crone, if you're willing to do so. 427-3772. Another thing I suggested was expansion of oral communications and public hearing time, a long unfulfilled promise. Even the wording of the time allowed for oral communication in the printed agenda has become more restrictive. From ordinarily limited to 3 minutes has been changed now to limited to 3 minutes. At your first council meeting as mayor, you essentially muzzled more than half the 23 speakers at oral communication, though you put other counts in the issues at city council. You should also take special care to follow the Brown Act around issues like board meetings that have council involvement, council member voting, and council funding, such as the Mercy Charities Housing Advisory Board, which needs to be open and agendized for the public. Mercy Housing operates as a sort of independent feudal fiefdom, even though it is funded by council and conducting public business. Previous mayors have refused to correct this outrageous Brown Act violation. Judicial action could require that Dolphin Lee actions be undone. That is not allowing council to pass or discuss resolutions where the public is not fully advised as to what is going on. This is boiled down to, in the past, fair scheduling, holding over debate until a later council meeting when it's going past midnight, or not scheduling council meetings at unusual times, such as late morning or early afternoon, as was done under Fuhrer Fitzmaurice. I added the word Fuhrer, it wasn't in the letter, for the giving away of the entire housing fund for one Mercy housing project. Full information, making sure that all information available to council members is available to the public. Hence, if a council member arrives with a resolution in her pocket, as council member Riley apparently did on October 23rd with her enforce all laws on the river anti-paradise measure, it should be circulated to the public before it is discussed, so they, the public, can have fair opportunity to comment on it during the public comment period. Also, not allow votes on measures not fully agendized, so that the buyer's resolution of June 25th, 2000, which killed the safe sleeping zones at 1 a.m. in the morning, see scheduling, which was significantly off-topic, should not be permitted, but they allowed it to proceed anyway. So in other words, if they're talking about something that the public doesn't know they're talking about, that's a violation of public process. Also, and here's something that directly affects me, not excluding members of the public from council chambers unless city council is significantly disrupted, such as by prolonged chanting, personal threats, etc. A negative out-of-order comment or reaction to council behavior is a healthy democratic response, not something that deserves police action. Apparently Christopher Crone believes otherwise. Fair treatment of the media, particularly the alternative media, restoring the right of video media to film from an accessible position. So, for instance, you see three videographers at council meetings, and they're community television people filming. They're paid to do that by the council. But if someone like Becky Johnson, an independent video journalist, tries to get behind the dais where this other media are, she may find herself in trouble. She was finding herself in trouble in the past. That may be something she hasn't been able to overcome. But for the whole year throughout the Fitzmaurice regime, this was a block to the media. And it's important to be able to film the media, so to be able to, for the media to be able to film people at the mic face on, so they can see them. Otherwise, you can film them from the back, but that is not as effective or as revealing or as helpful to the public. Restoring reasonable audio access to the media. Now, I, for example, have been barred from leaving a tape recorder at the mic so that I can catch the oral communication speakers. They tell you that you can plug into a box over at the side, but I found it doesn't work on my tape recorders. So I'm not able, I have to purchase tapes later. And people who don't have any money aren't able to purchase tapes. Sometimes I can't purchase tapes. There's a delay in doing so. It is an unfair and unnecessary restriction on the media that was imposed, again, by Fitzmaurice and has been continued by Christopher Crone. Sergeant Baker came up to me a month ago and said, "This is your tape recorder at the mic. You better take it, because I'm going to take it away from you." Meaning, he would not allow it to stay there. He would do what the city council told him to do, which is to confiscate the recorder. I think at the next council meeting, I will let that happen, and then I will simply see if I can get a lawsuit going. There actually are a number of things that may happen at the next city council. There's already been at least one member of the public who says that he intends to speak using words that the council has indicated they don't want to hear, perhaps making gestures that the council doesn't want to hear, reading an opinion from the First Amendment Foundation that he's been in touch with, that it is decorum rules are completely discretionary. They are advice to the public. They are not law by any means. And so all these intimidation that's been going on for the last decade around these rules is wrong, and the public has the right to reassert its control of the public process, or at least its right to participate in the public process. Returning to the issue of substance again briefly, your council's silence or bad votes on the following issues put your credibility in doubt. This is about Mayor Crone: rent control, not putting the sleeping ban on the ballot, not following up on your 1998 sleep as a human right resolution, continued Canfield occupation of the public tide lands, and ignoring the UCSC petitions against the Bush bombing campaign, ineffective and token citizen police review, outrageous police budgets and cost overruns. And again, we're moving off the public process when we talk about that. Let's take a break.
Together.
And that was Barbara Anderson and The Naked Truth again. Hearts Dance, 1995 or 6 CD. Really nice. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. We're going to be with you till 1:30. I'm Robert Norris. This is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. We give you the broadsides of things and send our broadsides at you. Hoping to have in the studio fairly soon activist Jerry Henry. He's in church, and he's going to come check us out after he does his church service. He's a street minister, and he's been barred from the Rancho de Mar Aptos Shopping Center. In fact, he also has gotten a ticket from yuppie planter falafel master Ali Baba, or Ali Ka. And I actually ran into Jerry Henry in court. I think what I'll do now is play for you a bit of the conversation I had with him a week or two ago. You may remember that Yuppie Planter, of course, is the area that used to be Hippie Planter, where there was folks sitting and kind of gathering in front of New Leaf Market, all now driven away by a redevelopment agency scheme to use the Sushi Now and Alibaba's cafes business problems to move their seats into an enclosed area, their seats and tables, that is now fenced off and forbidden to non-customers during the day, although people can go there at night when the tables and chairs are removed, and people do kind of gather there somewhat. I haven't been down there much recently. Weather hasn't been the best, and I've been looking at other things, and it is a fait accompli, but I think it's important to keep up the letting them know that there's a boycott of those places. Not just don't go to them, but go up to them and say, I'd like to patronize your businesses. And this includes New Leaf Market, by the way, which has remained silent, see no evil, speak no evil, say no evil. But I will not patronize your business as long as you engage in this process of social cleansing, this process of driving away young and poor people under the somehow illusion that you have a better society downtown without that group of people, or that that's somehow not a human rights violation as it is. Anyway, Jerry Henry was an individual who was involved in this. He got a ticket from Ali Baba, who has done numerous citizen complaints. I, too, of course, faced that from Matisse Selman for blocking the sidewalk, although I think that whole thing was dropped. Though, as I said, it'll be pursued as a civil lawsuit. I'm going to be taking that up this week. That's another matter that should be coming up. But Jerry, we got a ticket for littering, for dropping crumbs on the sidewalk, breadcrumbs. I think he was removing breadcrumbs from his beard. And I think Alibaba was claiming that he was too near his cafe and was doing so in a fashion that offended either him or his customers. And Alibaba has also taken action against Linda LeMaster and has sued her for, I think, battery or assault in court. We talked about that in past cases, after he dumped all her stuff on the sidewalk and she tossed a soda can at him, and it was Officer Brandt declining to take a citizen's arrest from her, or talking her out of it, but taking it immediately from Ali Ka, the master of harassment legal activity against poor people downtown. I would wager he's done more harassment than anybody downtown that I know of, and continues to do so with a wonderful smile and an open attitude and the friendliest disposition you've ever seen, which is nice, but doesn't have too much to do with the kinds of trouble he's causing people. Anyway, he did this to Jerry Henry, and Jerry Henry talks a little bit about this here in this brief discussion.
I'm telling Hitler that he wasn't bad because he let one Jew go.
It's 9 o'clock. On March 7th, I'm at the courthouse in the morning, having watched people stagger around with their morning coffee and survive after having gone through the security system. And I've just been told by activist Jerry Henry that Ali Baba, or Ali Ka, the owner of Ali Baba's cafe, spoke to him yesterday and told him, kind of came up and patted him on the shoulder. Well, why don't you tell it, Jerry?
Well, he wanted to know if we could just go on from this point. And I looked at him and I says, hey, you've got a little girl arrested. I said, why'd you have a little girl arrested that was just sitting down looking at Jade in front of me? Why do you call the police? And he says, oh, you talk about the past. That's all the past. He says, I never went to court and pursued any of those tickets. I just had the tickets given. It made me want to throw up. The guy's a slime ball.
Now tell me, for those who don't know, what actually happens to tickets to people that he fills out complaints against and has arrested, even if he doesn't go to court?
Well, I don't know. I think these are really questions that need to be brought up in this community. Is this, you know, because we know that these guys have had the unbroken support of the thugs with the guns on downtown.
Now, wait a minute. Are you talking about our Santa Cruz Police Department?
Yeah, those thugs with the guns on.
You're talking about the inestimable Sergeant Butchie Baker.
The thugs with the guns on. Yeah.
Well, I guess you see, there is a suggestion. I mean, I know you yourself were arrested for what, dropping food on the sidewalk, or what was your?
No, I took a box of food down to feed the homeless. He had me arrested.
He claimed that you were brushing crumbs out of your beard on the table.
No, I think he declared all kinds of things, didn't he, Scott? Didn't he declare that I was harassing customers? There were no customers there. Did I sit at his tables or something?
Yeah, feeding pigeons.
I didn't sit at his tables. Did I feed pigeons? I didn't feed pigeons. But he had his fascist. What was that fascist gun that he had come
Richards.
Down? Richards. Oh yeah,
he was a Richards.
Oh yeah, the Mr. Richards, the thug with the gun.
Another Santa Cruz police officer.
Yeah. Well, I think you need to distinguish between peace officers and law enforcement, and I think the law enforcement are the thugs, and I definitely think Richards falls in the categorization of hired thug.
Now, the question you've raised here is, what happens, or at least it's raised in my mind, is what happens when tickets get to court, and let's say Alibaba is telling the truth. I have no idea if he is or not, but if he is and doesn't show up in court, will the case still be prosecuted? Yours was dropped, right?
Oh, yeah, they sent a letter to Richard, sent a letter to me saying that he wished the case to be dismissed under the interest of justice because I wanted to subpoena all these records.
So once you attempted to get the background, they hastily dropped the case?
Yeah, and Alibaba the other day says, well, we never go to court and I never show up at court. Yeah, he lets all these kids get warrants on them and stuff, and he has these thugs out doing his social cleansing for him that have the guns on, getting paid by the citizens.
What name did he use on the ticket? Do you have a copy? Because I'd like to get a copy of that at some point so I can perhaps myself do a little research into how many tickets he actually has filed in the last 4 or 5 years.
I don't know. Well, we'd have to pull it out of my files at home and see.
I
think it'd be amazing because I've been sitting there when he's had people ticketed sitting right in front of me. Like as under his stupid deal of over 50 feet, within 50 feet of the ATM. I think it might have been a 1 foot discrepancy. They don't have a tape measure. This little girl the instance I'm talking about, the little girl had been from the Midwest, Richard's ticket, and she'd been in town 24 hours and had received 3 tickets in our social cleansing little community.
We're not talking about Zoe, right? This is another little girl.
Yeah, we're talking about another little girl.
A little girl, you mean a young woman who's of a diminutive stature.
Yeah, she had came out to California to see Santa Cruz. She had gotten here, and within 24 hours, she had 3 tickets. Richard sat there and gave her the 3rd ticket. She was sitting there looking at some jade in front of me.
Okay, well, thank you, Jerry. Scott, any comments? You've been around this scene a lot as well.
No.
Thank you. By the way, we're talking with Scott Rhodes, who is the author of several letters to the Sentinel dismissing the sleeping ban changes that allow camping in the parks for a privileged few and a well-funded few as a form of slavery. Did you, in fact, use that phrase?
Well, they need to stop criminalizing the homeless. And when the only reprieve from the sleeping ban from criminalization that you allow is work for the city, I just see that as a form of slavery.
Same thing Nazi Germany did pre-war. Pick up all the vagrants, make them fill potholes. And I think there was a letter addressing that in the paper the other day.
Yeah, there was. Now, it was a strange letter because it seemed to be supportive of that policy, and yet in revealing that policy, it seemed, of course, would provoke a wave.
At all.
I think it was sarcastic.
That it was,
really?
That it was definitely Nazi behavior down there.
Yeah. Thank you, guys. Appreciate the help, as usual.
And that was activist Jerry Henry in court, probably doing something around his appeal. He's appealing appalling charges and convictions from essentially asserting basic civil rights at the Aptus Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center, trying to advise young people about what their rights were. He actually has made his way into the studio with his vicious companion, Scott Rhodes, who's showing up more and more in the public press. It was in Good Times this week, Rhodes was, as was he in the Sentinel the last couple months, at least two or three times. Maybe we can get you, Scott, to belly up to the mic over here while Jerry does some natural functions in the back there. Let's see if this mic actually works. Talk very close to the mic, like with about a quarter of an inch away.
Okay, and is that close enough?
A little louder.
All right. Is that better?
That's better. Let's turn it around there. Okay. Now say something all else.
Right. Okay, is that good?
That's good. Talk directly into it. There you go.
Okay.
A little bit louder. So, Scott, you wrote an article. You wrote a letter to the Good Times this week. I don't know if I have it with me. Do you remember what you were writing about?
The Good Times. That was about...
Actually, I remember the general subject matter had to do
the
with...
The hippie planner downtown.
Right, there was some concern that Jerry, who had suggested, asked Matisse Selman, the owner of Sushi Now, why doesn't he perhaps serve swastikas with his sushi, or maybe...
Well, he wasn't asking Matisse. No,
he was... I know it was a rhetorical comment, but essentially he was saying... Your behavior is such as to indicate a kind of a Nazi-like disposition toward some people on the sidewalk. Is that accurate?
Yeah. I mean, I think that they're definitely making it clear that they wish to cleanse a group of people from that sidewalk. And very much attitude of Nazi Germany to cleanse a group of people from society, a group of undesirable people that they saw as useless to their society. And I think that the attitude is very much the same.
With the fence now in play, and I guess I don't see them getting a lot of business in that fenced-in area. In fact, I've heard people say that less people are patronizing these two kiosks now, Sushi Now and Alibaba's Cafe, which, by the way, I urge you to boycott and to let them know you're boycotting. But... less people do that because they feel like they're in a goldfish bowl. They feel like they're sort of in this, raised up in a platform downtown, though, of course, they've taken an area that was public and fenced it off. What's your sense on that, Scott? Is there less business than before?
We haven't spent a whole lot of time down there lately. I think there's definitely a sense that this isn't a public area, a place where people can congregate and talk with each other. That this is sort of a fishbowl.
Has there been increasing or continuing harassment there, or have the police sort of thought, well, we got rid of these kids, now let's see what happens next?
Oh, there's definitely been continuing harassment. Jerry's been confronted a couple times in the last about 2 weeks. By the police.
Jerry, you want to talk about that? I kind of belly up to the mic there.
Yeah, I was over at the courthouse looking for some paperwork on my case, and had to wait for somebody to come back, so I thought I'd go over to New Leaf and get something to eat, and got a bowl of soup, and I had just walked out of New Leaf and was sitting there eating my bowl of soup, and here I had a police officer screaming within inches of my face at a young man that I was standing there talking to, and screaming that he had been warned many times not to lean against the wall, to move along, and I think what they've done, and the minute the police officer was done, I gave him a great big Sig Heil.
Did Mayor Crone arrest you? Or?
No. Okay. But I think what they've done is very much to, rather than a speed trap, which we all know is illegal because it's entrapment, that they have built a social speed trap in front of New Life Leaf, and the fact that they have created a situation that if anybody hesitates, pauses, stops, they're subject to attack if they don't look as though they're the right person. They seem to be willing to attack if you're within 10 feet of a building. And then the same day, I had a police officer inform us about the railing, that there was going to be 10 feet. Well, when you look at it and they make the feet zone and you only have 8 feet of sidewalk left, it's they've definitely built a trap that's going to be interesting to see how they use it. I think I've already seen a bit of medicine about how they intend to use it.
It just gives a whole new meaning to imaginary numbers. I mean, if it's 10 feet from a building and 10 feet from that railing, then I guess you can walk through the imaginary numbers zone because there's no place to go. I mean, in fact, it's legal to be 2 feet from a building, 1 foot from a building, provided you aren't A, leaning against it, or B, sitting down there. And if you have your own chair, it's illegal. It's legal to bring your own chair as part of the so-called non-commercial display. Where do all these crazy rules come from? Your Santa Cruz City Council. The downtown ordinance is passed by Scott Kennedy's council, and which Mayor Crone has refused to put on the agenda for re-examination, even though they were brought up at the Homeless Issues Task Force as examples of laws, as you say, used as social traps to harass those that the city council, well, the Downtown Association in this case, through the City Council, wants to get rid of or see less of. We have an incoming call here. Let me give you a... Why don't you guys listen through these? We'll try and see what's cooking.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hello. Interesting show. Yeah, that thing, I went downtown and I took a look at it, and I guess it was after the kiosk were closed because it was full of the people who would usually be hanging out in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And it looked a lot like a playpen. Actually, just kind of passing by. It was
yuppie playpen during the day, hippie playpen during the night.
Pretty surreal. So I'm wondering, why are these people, what is it about the people who hang out in this area that is so undesirable? Who are these people?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've been there. I've seen youth there. I've seen elderly there. I've seen a lot of unemployed people there. I've seen people who could benefit from, you know, anything from any. I've seen, quote, normal people there, and I've seen people who might be considered mentally, in need of treatment, mm-hmm. and not getting treatment. And so, it's kind of a sorry for the big breaks.
Well, are you looking for my reaction, or maybe you got a
yeah?
Jerry, Scott, what are your thoughts on that? Any response to that?
Well, I think there's I think that that was a place. I think where the crossroads. I believe that is the crossroads. And I believe it's a very important part of this town. And I think it was best portrayed by Officer Wright?
Richards,
when he explained that he was not there for the citizens, and he was pointing at everybody on the bench, for you people, we are here for these businesses in this commercial zone. And I think that's when the light became a whole lot clearer to me that I was absolutely seeing fascism espoused by the police department, and I think we're ending up with spending zones. And if you're not spending fast enough, you need to get out. Whereas I believe that personally that citizens should be left alone, that we have enough criminal laws without creating these trumped up situations where we can persecute people,
that if they concentrate on the criminal laws and actually going after criminals and being good peace officers instead of social cleansers, that our community would be a whole lot better off, and that everybody needs to be welcome there. If they're not a criminal, leave them alone.
What do you think, caller?
I think that it's a very important point that the social function of the police in society is to protect private property. And that's interesting to me that this Officer Richards isn't at all confused about his social function. And he's there, you know, just doing his job. My question, I guess, I've finally been able to formulate it, is with the growing number of dispossessed and disenfranchised and just dissed people, poor people in the world, the number of these people growing, how long do you think this tactic of trying to invisibilize this sector or this segment of the population is going to, how long do you think this the business establishments are going to try and continue to invisibilize this group as it grows?
Jerry has an answer to that, or perhaps Scott. Go ahead, Jerry.
I think that this is going to continue until people stand up and make it clear to our city that it's just not acceptable, that fascism isn't what we want to be recognized as, that fascism is literally when government operates in the business interest, not in the citizens, when we stand up and demand that our government operate in the citizens' interest. That's one of the reasons I encourage people to actually ask Sushi now if he does hand out swastikas, and that when they see fascist behavior happening in downtown Santa Cruz, maybe it's time that citizens let out a good Sig Heil, so that they let the establishment in this community know that they're elected by the citizens. As far as I know, businesses and commerce does not vote.
Although, interestingly enough, you know, the establishment in recent years of downtown business districts, and we do have one here in Santa Cruz, which, and the kind of the shoveling or shepherding of legislation through the Downtown Commission, which is, that's a public body, results in the passage of a lot of laws that are, that criminalize behaviors that most of us consider to be innocent, but that are, let's, shall we say, considered less desirable by businesses, like, say, sitting down on the sidewalk. I know, for example, there's been a lot of harassment of people for sitting near buildings, and Food Not Bombs received a police surveillance team for the first time in some years. That's a report from Brian Kepke when it was serving food at, Cathcart and Pacific, because Food Not Bombs had moved out of the downtown area and was generally serving at the town clock and at San Lorenzo Park and at other places, but not downtown. Now, apparently, if they move back downtown, they're getting a special police protection, so to speak.
Hmm.
Just sort of a little update I heard on that. Any other thoughts, caller?
Yeah, I as a last and closing thought, it's a difficult position that I find myself in, because using the rhetoric of calling a shovel, and in fact labeling Matisse Selman and Ali Kha as fascists, and literally standing outside their enterprise and saying this is a fascist right here, it doesn't seem to be generating the kind of change and the magnitude of change that I would imagine that high-frequency hyperbole would. You know, it's like calling somebody a terrorist is a lot more socially acceptable and high-frequency than calling somebody a fascist. And so it's like, okay, so I can stand there and say, look, this is a very fascist thing that you're doing, but it doesn't affect the kind of change that I'm looking for. So that's a closing thought, and if you have any comments, I'll take them off the air. Thanks
okay.
for your time.
Thank you.
Yeah, my thought on that is, when I stand there, when I go by Alibaba's and Sushi Now, I usually say loudly to the community around me, a boycott Alibaba's, Sushi Now, and New Leaf Market, by the way, Jerry. Mr. Eats at New Leaf Market. Because, and then I explain why, these people have privatized, I don't use the word fascist the way Jerry does, because I think it loses effectiveness when you overuse it. He'll say, oh, you're just a wing nut, and I think Jerry's right, technically, that when the police operate on behalf of business interests, that is historically been a fascist position. But on the other hand, fascism also has another meaning in the society, which has to do with anti-Semitic beliefs, belief in authoritarian government, belief in the abrogation of the democratic process and a strong leader. And these are things I don't think either Alibaba or Sushi Now owners would say they support. So to call them fascists might confuse, for me, people as to what they're really doing, which is a fascist-like cooperation with the police, and which is also a privatization of the public areas without public process, and specifically, as Jerry and Scott have pointed out, a social cleansing of groups of people, young people, counterculture people, homeless people, a removal of people from the area, not because of specific behaviors that are objectionable, but because of who they are and how they're dressed. And there has been some concern about specific behaviors, but the reason that I say that that has not been the real reason here is because they had other options for dealing with those so-called objectionable behaviors, where those objectionable behaviors ranged from alleged harassment of women through comments, sexist comments, to, I don't know, spitting in, you're the infamous loogie man in the trash can, spitting in the trash can, but mainly it's being an uncongenial environment for a business to have a lot of young people there. Also, the claim was that there were kind of gang-like qualities. It wasn't a real gang, it wasn't gang colors, but it was a sort of an in-group that had taken over the area, and other people found themselves uncomfortable there, and Neil Coonerty always makes this a big deal that you want to move groups along on the sidewalk, or as a Sergeant Hennig used to put it, Hobo Hunter Hennig, as I called him, you want to cattle herd those folks along. The behaviors, the objectionable behaviors, could have been dealt with through codes of conduct, through guidelines, as indeed Celia Scott's guidelines cost $10,000, and they were put together by City Council mediators Daniel Rubin and Kim Hallinan back in 1995, but they were immediately dumped into the dustbin by then Mayor Rotkin and have not been revived, but they're still sitting there. I keep bringing them up to the great new progressive city council, and I can't get them to do anything about them or reconsider them. There are other ways to proceed with behavioral problems than engage in selective harassment and privatization of the area. Go ahead.
Yeah, and one of the things, I had a conversation with Matisse this last week. I think it was this last week, if not the week before. And he wanted to know how we solved this. And I believe very, very strongly that that any foundation for resolving all this needs to revolve around the State Unruh Act. And the stand in the fact that we have a state that recognizes that all citizens have equal rights, and that the signs, we reserve the right to refuse service to anybody, is actually a violation of the Unruh Act. And I think Santa Cruz really needs to start looking at the civil rights issues and trying to uphold the Unruh Civil Rights Act, and looking at our Supreme Court instead of trying to circumvent it looking for compliance. It's like the Chicago case where they've ruled on the move-along ordinance. It's unconstitutional when they keep passing these loitering laws, when loitering has been struck as unconstitutional. That when a Supreme Court justice writes that if the desire to stand is all the desire one would need, that the upholding of the civil rights things, I think, is where Santa Cruz needs to start.
I agree, and one way to go is with abolishing the downtown ordinances, and again, looking for, again, a specific way to deal with particular perceived problems, because obviously the laws come into play when people feel that they're not getting... They're seeing behavior in conservative folks downtown. And I don't want to dismiss all of their concerns as simply being prejudice, paranoia, and unjustified sort of fascist leanings. I mean, some people have some concerns. And, of course, there is the criminal law to deal with that. And I often refer people to that. But there's something in the middle that I think we also need. I think we could have mediation downtown of problems that arise. We have a street performer set of guidelines which say if you don't like the way someone's playing there, you're getting annoyed with their music, give them an hour and ask them to move on. It's not a rigid... It varies. Regarding the Unruh Civil Rights Act, that has to do with the rights of the public to have access to public accommodations and businesses. It doesn't really have to do with the public sidewalk, private sidewalk. I mean, I suppose you could claim that any member of the public has the right to buy sushi and eat it in Matisse's now privatized little hunk of the sidewalk. And I think probably Matisse would agree with you. He would say anybody who buys sushi can sit down there and use it. In fact, we thought of using that as a technique whereby everyone would this guy came by and gave me $60 and said, here, have everybody buy sushi and sit there. The problem was I had a boycott that I committed myself, but I couldn't really do that. But it wasn't a bad idea. Just have everyone buy a soda, fill up the area, and just, try to use it to indicate that everyone had the right to be there. He feels everyone has the right to be there who's a customer of his. So it's not really a violation of the UNRRA Civil Rights Act. What's a violation is they're taking public land that is to be used for other things than simply being one of Matisse or Alibaba's customers. And there aren't that many pieces of land downtown that have that area. And there are not many planters downtown where people can gather. And then when they do go to gather, we see what happens. They went across the street to the Pacific Cookie Company, and immediately the city pulled the benches, obviously, to get rid of them from there. What are your thoughts on this?
You know, I kind of disagree with you in a way. I think when we have the Downtown Business Association, which is incorporated, which is definitely an entity for the businesses that are trying to control the clientele downtown, that it's definitely a violation of the State UNRRA Act. I think when you and I were both asked, were instructed under threat of arrest, we'd be arrested if we went down back into Town Host Center. I think that's absolutely a violation of the State UNRRA Civil Rights Act. I believe that there's been no prosecution. You know, I asked the I've asked people, is a willful violation of State UNRRA Act a crime? I asked Joseph Onis with the Sheriff's Internal Affairs Department. He says, of course it is. And I don't believe this town ever has enforced the UNRRA Civil Rights Act against any business, and it is a crime.
The problem there, Jerry, is that, you know, you can't really enforce it except through a civil lawsuit in terms of a criminal prosecution unless you run for DA and get in there in the DA's office, as far as I know. I mean, again, I could be wrong. There could be some obscure
I think there may be other ways. The DA isn't the only avenue we have in this state. We have the grand jury. If the grand jury doesn't respond, then addressing the attorney general. If the attorney general doesn't respond, go on.
Those two avenues, the grand jury, I think actually that's an underused avenue for me. I recently got the grand jury forms. I haven't done anything with them. Come to the Huff meeting on Wednesday, and let's see if we can get some grand jury subcommittees going to get the grand jury interested in some of these concerns. The state attorney general, I went and talked to McPherson's aides, got the state attorney general forms, then heard that this only has to do with civil complaints. They don't take criminal complaints from citizens. They are simply, they will take civil complaints about consumer problems, so that's something to be considered. Regarding the hosts, that's, of course, the little office next to the Del Mar Theater, which is sort of a police substation. I call them the pests. They're the downtown eyes and ears of the police force, set up by, unfortunately, Catherine Byers, funded by the city, run around telling you not to sit here, not to sit there, and so they wear purple uniforms. Jerry and I were both barred from the host center, not because we gave the Nazi salute or anything of that sort, although we had a perfect right to do that, and in these public places, but because we were critics of what was going on, and I had actually taken a host to task, Terry Butler, I demanded that a criminal charge be leveled against him for excessive noise because he was broadcasting this offensive, well, not that offensive to me, but it was making it difficult for me to have people do petitioning. I mean, I was petitioning at this table to have people sign my petitions. Blasting through the speakers above New Leaf in order to get rid of a so-called undesirable element. And you and I, Jerry, were both barred from the host headquarters, but of course that had no meaning, and I've been in there since. But that's a business, see, that's inside a business, and that is a violation of the UNRRA Civil Rights Act, though it's hard to prove because you have to prove that you are a specific class that is being denied access and that it is being done intentionally. Because you're a member of that class. I mean, I have not examined the case law in terms of how hard it is to prove, and I'd love to get more information on that. But I don't think that that's equivalent to the privatization of the sidewalk, because they are not going to, if they then excluded us from that, from the privatized area, and saying that we couldn't be there for one reason or another once we had purchased something, then that would be a violation of the UNRRA Civil Rights Act. But I go beyond that. I say the very privatization, even though it doesn't violate the UNRRA Civil Rights Act, is a violation of, to me, the need to have public spaces accessible to all of us. It's not, I can't find a legal violation, but I find a moral violation there. What are your thoughts?
Well, I know, you know, going back to the town host center, I call them the hosties with the mosties. You know, I tape recorded, I had a thug with a gun on, telling me that if I came back in there, I'd be arrested. I wanted to know why, and I was told it was because Jeannie did not like me. Now, when you have government-sponsored, run, things set up to operate for the business, and you're being told that you're going to be arrested because somebody doesn't like you, I think those things really have to be addressed.
Yeah, and a city council, too, when they tell you that the Chris doesn't like you, and you're, or Tim Fitzmaurice doesn't like you, and therefore you're barred from the meeting. That's another problem that comes up. Again, of course, they said that it was because of my unbecoming behavior, which they objected to, but it was that they didn't like that I was using a form of speech that reflected rather directly and dramatically on their on the way they were conducting city council. It indicated that I thought that they were acting in a fascist or Nazi-like manner. Let's take a musical break, and we'll be right back. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM.